Another Ukrainian stronghold city is the target of Russian missile strikes.
The shelling of these areas intensify with the time as Russian forces moving closer, more shelling are happening.
Plus, how Russia continues to use disinformation as a political weapon.
The government of this small country believes that Russia, a year after starting an expansionist war in Ukraine, has a plan to force a violent change in power here.
And later in the program, Healing Young Hearts. Children of fallen Ukrainian war heroes spend 2 weeks of vacation in the U.S. state of Colorado. Today is Tuesday, March 14th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Lori London in Washington. A Russian missile struck an apartment building today in the city of Kramatorsk, one of Ukraine's major strongholds in its eastern Donetsk region. At least one person was killed. President Volodymyr Zelensky posted on Telegram that the missile hit the center of the city and damaged six high-rise buildings. I spoke with Anna Chernikova in Kyiv earlier about the significance of Kramatorsk's location.
In case Russian forces take control of Bakhmut, gives them even, you know, better location to attack Slovensk and Kramatorsk. And Slovensk and Kramatorsk would be one of the main, if we imagine that Slovensk is under Russian control, we can say that Donetsk region, it's like almost 100% that Russian forces would take control of the Donetsk region, because Slovensk and Kramatorsk, one of the main cities in this area in the Donetsk region. And this is why Bakhmut is that important at this moment, because it basically keeps Russian forces from Slovensk and Kramatorsk. But the shelling of these areas intensify with the time as Russian forces moving closer, more shelling are happening. Part of my family is from Izum.
How does that impact you on a personal level?
Well, I mean, it was quite a tough time. First of all, Izum was almost completely destroyed, and we were trying to get my grandfather out of there. He was under occupation for 117 days. It was tough, definitely, for the whole family. He was 88 at that point, and we just didn't want him to die, and we had no access to his body or, you know, even not have an opportunity to say bye. And just in general, for him to die because of the bombardment and during this occupation, it was really tough. And then when Izum was liberated, I went there with Miroslava Gongadze. We went together. And for me, this city is like more about my childhood memories, because I spent my summer holidays at my grandparents' place. So for me, this little city is like a lot of happy memories from there. And then when I saw it destroyed, basically what I found out for myself, that Russians were not just trying to destroy physically the city, they were also trying to destroy people's happy memories from this city.
Life in Kyiv is different now. It's got sort of a new normal. I'm hoping you can give us a description about what things look like with statues protected and different things that seem to be the new normal around the city.
In general, the city of Kyiv has changed completely from how it looked before February 24th, 2022, and how it looks now. And this new normal is a very correct description, I think, because Kyiv is a very historical place. So it's an old town with a lot of historical and cultural heritage sites and heritage objects around. And there is still a lot of fortifications around the city. And today, actually, Kyiv authorities announced that those fortifications would be renovated. So some of them would be removed, some of them would be strengthened, and some of them would be ready in case any new danger, any new risks of the on-land assault is happening to the city in the future. This cultural heritage objects, which are covered now around the city. And basically, when you walk around, and Kyiv is famous for its sites and for its history, you would not see those objects physically, but you would see fortification boxes with an image of the historical object which is located inside, and a little text with a history of what is basically there. And these cultural fortifications, they play a very important role. And during October attack, attacks, missile attacks on Kyiv, one of Kyiv's famous monuments was saved thanks to this fortification. The fortification was completely destroyed and the monument was not even damaged. And you see it everywhere, you know, even huge monuments are covered. And this is something that it's kind of a message from Ukrainian cultural life representatives, because for Ukrainians, it's extremely important to save this cultural heritage and their history. And this is why so much attention has been paid already to protect this monument.
And what else do people see that they wouldn't have ever seen before? Like, I'm hearing that there are signs everywhere pointing to the nearest shelter, things like that.
This is also the case, but I cannot say that pointers of the shelters is something that catches your eye. Just in general, people know that the main shelter is metro station. So in case something happening and you are outside, most probably you would go to the metro station. And there are signs, of course. There are also signs in different places like restaurants, cafeterias, post offices, or, for example, administrative buildings, schools. You can see also signs that this place has chargers, has some warm drinks in case there is an outage. People can come to charge, people can come to get connection. And this is also what you can see around the town. And also, I think that generators is quite a new thing for Ukraine in general and for Kyiv in particular, because during long hours of outages or even days, you can see generators out next to the, again, restaurants or offices around the town. And the sound of generators is basically the sound of this past winter in Kyiv and in Ukraine in particular.
Anna Chernikova reporting for VOA from Kyiv. While the world has seen images of house-to-house combat in Bakhmut, most of the front lines in the Ukrainian war are much different. Dug into trenches or under the cover of trees, soldiers endure the tiring routine of waiting for orders or an enemy attack. Elizabeth Chernev narrates this report by Jan Boychat from Velika Novosilka in the Donbas region of eastern Ukraine.
The soldiers wait, sometimes patient, sometimes bored, ears attentive to the sound of the radios. Under the canopy of trees in this stretch of forest in southern Donbas, they are not sure what is happening at the front lines, only 6 kilometers away. Then the lull ends abruptly. They don't know what they shot. They have no idea if they hit the target or not. Here, they only get coordinates from the radio. Ivan is a 28-year-old soldier. Like most Ukrainian soldiers operating here, he does not provide a surname.
We got a command that there is a target. We just make one shot, and after that it was impossible to work because it was heavy snowfall.
Ivan leads this artillery platoon. He spends most of his time in this bunker or next to this 2S3 Akatsia, a self-propelled gun from the Soviet era. War action comes for his team only a few times a day, sometimes a few times a week. The intensity of the fighting in Bakhmut is an exception to the nearly 1,000 kilometers of front lines that cut Ukraine from northern Donbas to the south in Kherson. Warfare here is almost always a tedious wait in trenches and forests. Another soldier, Sergei, says that wait may be boring, but it is always tense.
They have tanks and armored vehicles over there in that tree line. Sometimes they shoot at us, shoot RPGs.
Sergei has been in these trenches since April. The war here, as on almost every line of contact between the Russians and the Ukrainians, has been static for months. Since the Great Autumn Ukrainian offensive, advances and retreats have been rare. Here in this trench, the soldiers keep a sharp eye on the open and thoroughly mined field that separates them from the Russian soldiers. Now and then, they shoot each other. But soon, the silence returns. And the soldiers go back to their tedious routine of patrolling the trenches, looking at the fields, and combing the sky for drones. Not far from there, Sasha and Alexei spend their days in this house, at the entrance to Velika Novosilka, a small ghost town. They've been here long enough to think about what this war is about.
The war is very different from what I imagined. People don't tell you everything. They hide the details. Even my stepfather didn't tell me everything.
The day Sasha and Sergei spoke to VOA, they were digging a foxhole under the small house that had sheltered them for so long. They said it was a good way to keep themselves busy during the moments when the war is on hold. For Jan Boychat in the eastern Donbas region of Ukraine, Elizabeth Chernev, VOA News.
Moldova is fighting back at what its officials believe are Russian attempts to destabilize the tiny former Soviet republic, which borders Ukraine and has long had leanings toward the West. Moldovan leaders have unleashed a campaign against Russian propaganda that has reopened the debate on the use of the Russian language and freedom of expression. Jonathan Speer narrates this report from Ricardo Marchina in the Moldovan capital of Chisinau.
Moldovan President Maia Sandu takes on a serious tone as she addresses her nation. The government of this small country believes that Russia, a year after starting an expansionist war in Ukraine, has a plan to force a violent change in power here. The purpose of Russia's actions are to overthrow the constitutional order, she says, change the legitimate government in Chisinau to an illegal one, which would put our country at the service of Russia. Moldovan society is deeply divided between Romanian speakers, historically linked to Romania and Europe, and Russian speakers, who maintain strong ties to Moscow. This de facto 50-50 division is the perfect ground for Russian propaganda to promote the Kremlin's agenda here, much as it happened in Ukraine. The cameras are off at RTR Moldova, a channel based in Chisinau. The Moldovan government has withdrawn its broadcast license, along with five other Russian language channels. The official justification is that these channels illegally broadcast programming produced in Russia, but the unspoken reason is different. They are accused of being the hand of the Kremlin in Moldova. Employees at the channel criticize that decision and say it leaves a large part of the population without content that is impossible to create in Moldova because of a lack of advertising revenue. Vasily Moisinko is a journalist at the Russian language TV channel RTR in Chisinau. The content from Russia that we broadcast is traditional for many Moldovan viewers. There are many people here who are Russian speaking, and they really like these programs that are impossible to produce here. The closure of these channels has reopened the debate over freedom of expression during wartime. The authorities responsible for this blackout have been blunt in stating their reasons. Liliana Vitu is president of Audiovisual Council, the body that suspended the license to these channels.
Well, freedom of speech doesn't mean freedom to disinform. We looked at how certain TV stations reported before the war. Prior to the war, we noticed that a group of media stations prepared this attack on Ukraine. It was an informational preparation, justification for the aggression that was to come.
Mikhail Serkeli is one of the best-known political news YouTubers in the country. In his opinion, the now-suspended TV channels are Putin's loudspeakers in Moldova.
Of course, there is you have to choose. There is a freedom of speech from one side, and from another side, there is a security of the country, security of the nation. They are promoting the hatred against Ukraine. They are promoting Russian general line of politics.
Others believe that the suspension of these Russian-speaking channels is an attack against press freedom. That is the view of GRT TV, a channel in the southern region of Gagauzia that broadcasts in Russian, Romanian and Gagauz, the local language that has not been closed. Vadim Anastasov is its director. It is difficult, he says, to state that this is freedom of speech when certain people in power try through their influence to press somehow or dictate something. That is why I think there is no freedom of speech. Moldova has joined countries in Europe in banning Russian propaganda channels, but having such a large Russian-speaking population, the debate in this country goes much deeper. For Ricardo Marchina in Chisinau, Moldova, Jonathan Speer, VOA News.
The Kremlin recently asserted that Washington was advocating for Ukraine to seize territory in Russia. Polygraph Info explains why the Ukrainian Defense Contact Group is providing weapons to Kyiv.
Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu claimed that the Ukrainian Defense Contact Group, a global coalition that supplies Ukraine with heavy weapons, has openly called on Ukraine to seize territory inside Russia. The United States and its allies have begun to supply heavy offensive weapons, openly calling on Ukraine to seize our territories, Shoigu said during a ministry conference call on February 7th. That is misleading. The United States and its partners provide heavy weapons to Kyiv on the condition that Ukraine will not use those weapons to strike Russia's internationally recognized territory. U.S. President Joe Biden said that the United States is supplying Ukraine with weapons to repel aggression, but not encouraging or enabling Ukraine to strike beyond its borders. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said that foreign-supplied weapons would be used only to drive invading forces out of Ukraine. "We're not planning to attack Russia," Zelensky told Newsmax. Last December, Ukraine launched 3 drone strikes targeting military bases inside Russia that had been used to launch airstrikes on civilian Ukrainian targets. "We have neither encouraged nor enabled the Ukrainians to strike inside of Russia," U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said, referring to the Ukrainian drone strikes.
Polygraph Info is a fact-checking website produced by Voice of America. The website serves as a resource for verifying the increasing volume of disinformation and misinformation being distributed and shared globally. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Lori London. The Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation held an exhibition last month in Washington dedicated to the war in Ukraine. The traveling exhibit, War Up Close, uses virtual reality to show the horrors of war. Karina Bafrajian has the story.
Bucha, Irpin, Kharkiv, and many more cities that Russian forces have damaged or destroyed are at the center of an exhibition called War Up Close, organized by the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation in Washington. In this one-day preview, visitors used virtual reality to dive into the ugly reality of war.
Most of the leaders who arrived to Ukraine, they first go to Bucha or Irpin to see how it is. We cannot bring everyone there, but instead we can have all this recorded and bring to other countries, like the United States or European countries.
Another exhibit curator is photojournalist Mykola Milchenko. He says one goal of War Up Close is to show Americans the gory reality of the conflict and demonstrate the crimes Russia has committed in Ukraine.
We want to show the truth that Russians are not bombing only the military bases, as they proclaim, but they are killing civilian peoples. They're destroying schools, hospitals, museums, and just simple apartments and houses.
The exhibition is attracting large crowds of people.
Awful, awful. We see snippets of it on TV, but here you see the whole thing more and more and more, the total damage.
Katerina Smagli, who works for the Ukrainian embassy in the U.S., introduced the exhibit and reminded viewers that Ukrainians are continuing to fight.
Ukraine will stand. We will not flee. We will not surrender. And you should never doubt our strength and our resilience. And when I heard my mom telling me those words, I realized that Ukraine will stand. Because if a woman of 70 years old has so much courage, this country will not be defeated by anyone.
The exhibition will also head to Paris, Berlin, and Warsaw, Poland, among other places. For Karina Bafranjan in Washington, NRI's VOA News.
14 children of fallen Ukrainian war heroes got a chance to spend 2 weeks of vacation in Denver, Colorado, thanks to local volunteers from this U.S. state. Svetlana Prestinska has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Christina Mordik is from Mariupol, Ukraine. Her father served in the Ukrainian National Guard and died in 2022 fighting at the Azovstal steel plant. Christina's mother spent 7 months in Russian captivity. Together with 13 other children of fallen Ukrainian war heroes, Christina got a chance to travel to the United States from Ukraine and spend 2 weeks in Colorado, thanks to local volunteers.
I love tubing. We went down the hills in these things that look like donuts. The nature is breathtakingly beautiful. I'm very grateful for this opportunity, for the emotions we got to experience here.
The U.S. vacation for the 14 Ukrainian children was made possible by local volunteers from the Ukrainian community, as well as local initiatives and the local Methodist Church.
The idea to organize this came from one of our volunteers, a former National Guard member, who asked us to consider bringing the children of fallen Ukrainian soldiers here.
The volunteer's idea took off, and the group quickly raised enough money to make it happen.
We raised $25,000, though we initially aimed at $20,000, and it made us very happy. There are many sponsors and caring people. We see the kids' smiles, and we know it wasn't in vain.
Anna Datsko is from Lviv. Her father died in the Luhansk region in April 2022.
I love the people here. They were incredibly welcoming. We got to visit many cities here, but I loved the virtual reality museum the most.
Every day there were small trips and tours. Volunteers with the Coloradans for Ukraine Foundation of Co4UA organized one outing.
Today we got to go to Pikes Peak on a train. The mountain is 4,000 meters high. We'll also go to the Garden of the Gods and do a little hike there. We want to give the children a great experience.
During their vacation, the children also met with the local Ukrainian community in Colorado Springs, visited the Colorado General Assembly, a mountain ski resort, and attended a couple of basketball games.
I'm a huge basketball fan. I play myself, so for me, it was incredible to watch a game.
Grigoriev is from Odessa. His father was gravely wounded in combat, but after a long rehabilitation process, he headed back to the front lines. Now he's fighting in Bakhmut. Many of the local families that housed the children say they want to help more families and children in the future. For Svetlana Pristinska in Denver, Colorado, NRI's VOA News.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And on social media, just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Lori London.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.